He pulled one of Magnolia's arms over his shoulder and moved with her toward the building. X raised his rifle with his free hand. They slipped and fell in the mud, landing snared together. The first thing he did was grab his rifle, plucking it from the muck. Then he grabbed Magnolia and pulled her to her feet.
"Work with me here, kid," he grumbled.
"My head... I..."
X hadn't noticed the crack in her helmet until now. The beast had definitely done some damage. The tusks had scarred the metal, and a puncture wound dripped blood over the Team Raptor symbol.
"Hold on," X said. "We're almost to the door."
Miles barked behind them, but X kept his gaze on the building. When they finally got to the door, he propped Magnolia up against the foundation and rattled the handle. It was locked. Using his muddy boot, he kicked it once, then twice, breaking it off the hinges. The metal door banged open into a dusty room. He helped Magnolia inside, then motioned for Miles to follow. But when he looked for the dog, all he saw was the muddy field and knee-high weeds. A bark sounded from the sky, and his eyes darted toward the storm clouds where a vulture was flapping away with Miles in its talons.
"No!"
X shouted at the top of his lungs. Katrina was already nearing the halfway point of her cardio workout. She finished lap 50 around the launch bay of the Hive. Some routines she wanted to keep, despite the painful memories on the ship. Her workouts were one of them. She had trained here as a hell diver for most of her adult life. Sweat coursed down her skin, and her muscles burned. By the 51st lap mark, she was starting to fight to keep the pace. But not just her body was struggling. Her mind and heart were fighting the battle of regret, and the poison was starting to infiltrate her soul. Everything that had happened over the past few months came rushing over her during her run. Normally, exercise helped reduce stress and let her concentrate on what mattered. Not this evening. She couldn't stop thinking about the child she lost to malnutrition. The thoughts prompted a rush of energy that pushed her harder through lap 55. She ran the 56th at a record pace, the pain in her muscles yielding to the flood of warmth pumping through her veins. She tried to block the images of her child from her mind, but no amount of mental discipline could repair her heart. The anguish was torture, but she deserved every bit of it. The porthole windows flashed by, and the launch tubes blurred as sweat dripped into her eyes. She tried to tell herself she didn't want to lose her baby, but the truth was, she had decided she couldn't live in a world where Leon Jordan was in control. The man had been mad, trying to kill her friends and executing anyone who threatened him. She had wanted to die herself, but instead, she lost her child. And she was still alive. It wasn't right. Part of her wished she had died, but she still had a duty to humanity. Grunting, Katrina ran even harder, her muscles pushed to the edge, her endurance stretching to its limits. Her lungs took in the oxygen greedily, but no matter how much air she sucked in, she couldn't get enough. Stars broke across her vision. Sweat trickled down her pale skin. At lap 70, she squinted into the dimly lit space, trying to focus on the banners hanging from the bulkheads above the lockers. The symbols of the Helldivers were displayed proudly there. Team Raptor, Team Angel, Team Phoenix, Team Wolf. The banners were a useful distraction from the pain of her other thoughts. For a moment, she felt as though she could keep going. "Just 10 more laps," she told herself. "Only 10 more, and you've hit 10 miles." As she ran, she continued to look at the banners, picturing the ghosts of Helldivers throughout the room. In her mind's eye, she saw Rick Weaver sitting at a card table, looking over his hand with a sly grin. Aaron Everhart closed a locker and held up a hand at her as she passed. X was there, too, winking at her the way he had all those years ago, when a spark of love had united the two of them. Ty Parker, the technician who had once manned the launch tubes, was polishing one of the lids, chomping on an herb stick. The images were all just figments of her imagination, but seeing the launch tubes reminded her again how many people had died over the years. It wasn't just the ghosts of the men and women who had perished diving that made her heart pound. It was also what these tubes had been used for, long before the Helldivers ever came into this world. The ghost of Captain Maria Ash, hair all but gone from the radiation treatment, stood in the center of the launch bay with her hands cupped behind her back, stoical, and strong, despite the cancer eating her throat. She looked at Katrina and said, "The future of these airships is in your hands now. You must not concentrate on the past if you are to lead humanity to a new home in the future." Ash disappeared, replaced by her successor. That Jordan was on his knees the moment before she had killed him helped ease some of that pain. Killing him was one thing she didn't remotely regret. Adrenaline rushed through her veins, and Katrina ran her fastest lap yet, her shoes slapping the metal hard and echoing through the vaulted room. On the 79th lap, she stumbled, tripped, and crashed to the floor with such force she flipped onto her side and landed on her back. The ghosts were gone now, and she was alone. Katrina remained there several minutes, taking in deep breaths, her body tingling, legs finally relaxing. Tears welled in her eyes, and one streaked down her face. She clamped her eyelids shut, trying to block the mental torture as the poison of regret sank deeper into her pounding heart.
"Captain, are you okay?" said a deep voice across the room.
"Yes, one moment," Katrina replied.
She quickly pushed herself up and got to her feet to face a figure across the room. He was standing in the entrance to the launch bay, but the light was too dim to make out his features. She pulled down on the bottom of her tank top and turned to wipe the last tears from her eyes. Then she turned back to the figure who still hadn't identified himself and saw the shadow of what looked like a sword. Her heart froze, a terrifying image surfacing in her mind. For a fleeting moment, it was as if Jordan had come back from the dead to get his revenge.
"Captain," the person entreated.
He walked into the light, and she saw Lieutenant Lester Mitchells, his red hair ruffled as usual.
"I'm sorry to bother you, ma'am."
He paused and tilted his head slightly.
"Are you okay?"
She nodded, sucked in a breath, and started across the room.
"I'm fine. Just thought I saw a ghost, is all."
6. Magnolia slapped the floor with her palm in frustration, tears streaming down her face. Outlandish wails rose into a cacophony outside, a mixture of howling beasts and screeching birds. The macabre music assaulted her ears as the minutes passed by. She strained to hear anything that would tell her ex was still alive. Gunfire, a bark from Miles, a message over the comms, anything to let her know he was still alive. She had blown it. Bad. Had she paid more attention while crossing the field, maybe she would have seen the beast sneaking up on her. Maybe she could have brought her rifle up in time to shoot it between the eyes. Or she might have stabbed it with her blade. Instead, she had rushed across the clearing as fast as she could get to the compound. X was right. God damn it, he was always right. Which, of course, was why he had survived so long in this dangerous world, and why she had a hole in her helmet. She reached up to check the damage. The tusk had punctured the crest, but not her skull. A few centimeters more, though, and her scalp would have been oozing brains instead of just a little blood. Patience saves your life. Rushing gets you killed.
"You were right, X," she muttered.
She was lucky this time. The mistake hadn't gotten her killed, but she wasn't sure Miles would be so lucky. The vulture had pulled him into the sky. She would never forget the raw scream from X that followed. He had taken off running after them, yelling at Magnolia to stay put. She sat with her back to the wall, head throbbing and heart pounding. A single tear streaked down her cheek. X still hadn't returned, and all she could do was sit here, hoping for the best.
"You're a helldiver. You know better than to hope."
Helldivers didn't sit around and hope for something to happen. Helldivers got up and made something happen. But what could she do? If she did leave, she could get lost in the jungle or eaten by the monster hogs. Using the butt of her rifle, she pushed herself up, taking a moment to let the wave of dizziness pass and to think about her next move. She checked her HUD. The readouts were good, at least. Radiation levels were minimal, and her battery unit was at 70%. But she still had no idea how long she would be here. Better to use her flashlight instead of the NVGs, which drained the battery unit. Switching on the beam, she played it across the room. Dust particles floated in the air like fine snow. Two tables lay upended in the middle of the space. Several chairs were on their backs nearby, legs angling up at the ceiling. The light hit thick cobwebs stretched across the metal pegs. Cabinets, a bookshelf, and a desk stood against the opposite wall. Cracked light bulbs protruded from sconces on the walls. Every window had been boarded up with metal hatches. Whoever had taken shelter here did a good job sealing the structure, aside from the front door that X had kicked in. A T-shaped bar was now locked in place over the metal entrance. It seemed the former occupants had left without bothering to secure the door when they abandoned the place. A second door led into another room, which she hadn't checked yet. A loud crack of thunder rattled the window hatches. She moved toward the door she still hadn't opened. Halfway there, she stopped and closed her eyes. X, do you copy? It was the third time she had tried him in the past few hours. Only static crackled from the speakers. The sound filled her with dread. He either was dead or had gone radio silent to avoid detection by the hogs. Magnolia sucked in a breath of stale air and opened the door to the other room. A monitor the size of her wrist computer was mounted to the wall right of the entrance. She played her light over computer equipment in the center of the room. "What the?" she whispered. These were not the type of computers they had on the Hive or Deliverance. This stuff looked ancient. Boxy computers and monitors were stacked on tables. She swung the beam to the left. A pile of rubble covered most of the floor in the center of the room where the wall and part of the roof had caved in. Two thunderclaps shook the structure, rattling the metal hatch over a window at the far end of the room. She shined her beam in that direction, hitting a row of chairs and more desks. Facing the central desk sat a skeletal figure, head hanging at an odd angle. The top part of the skull was missing, and raising the light, she saw on the ceiling the brown stippling that had been this person's brains. The gun was nowhere in view, which told her someone else had taken it before abandoning the building. But what really interested her was the radio equipment in front of the corpse. She made her way over and flashed the light over all sorts of devices she remembered from textbooks in school. A switchboard with dozens of toggle switches, a ham radio, and what looked like an archaic Morse code transmitter key. Grabbing the back of the chair, she gently moved it out of the way, trying to make as little noise as possible. Despite her efforts, the metal legs scratched the floor, and a leg bone cracked off the corpse. Magnolia held in a gasp as a furry spider pulled itself out of the home it had made in the skull. It raised its head, brandishing fangs, then clambered away. She followed it with her light till it took refuge in the debris pile. Then she turned back to the desks, astonished at how well preserved the room was. Maybe it had lasted long after the apocalypse. Using her light, she scanned the switchboard. Symbols and text marked the different buttons, though she doubted that anything worked. Even if this place had continued operating after the nuclear fires, it couldn't possibly still have backup power. From what she could tell, this wasn't an ITC facility. "X, do you copy?" Mag said into the comm. "I found some radio equipment. I'm going to try and get it working." Static once again crackled in her helmet. She lowered her light and fished out a thin cable, which she patched into her wrist monitor. Then she plugged the other end into a second cable, which divers use to hack into old systems such as this. All she had to do was get enough juice to turn the radio back on. Next, she plugged the other end of the cord into her chest battery slot. The charge would, she hoped, be enough to power the equipment. Clamping the flashlight between her teeth, she pulled off her gloves, then tapped the screen of her wrist computer, bringing it online. A distant wail broke over the thunder outside. Something massive rammed the outside of the building. Her eyes darted over to the debris pile.
"Mags, do you copy?"
The sound of X's voice in her helmet startled her.
"Yes, I copy," she said softly.
"Where are you?"
"Same place you left me. Where are you?"
"I'm tracking miles, but those things are hunting me."
She could hear snorting in the background. It sounded nothing like the dog. A flurry of gunshots rang out. These she could hear inside the building. X and the hogs were close. The wrist monitor blinked. The main dashboard on the desk suddenly flashed with colors. The The radio equipment crackled to life, and several monitors came online.
"Oh shit, I did it," she said.
"I got a radio working here, X."
"Screw the radio, Mags. I'm about to be hog shit. And Miles is still..."
More gunfire popped in the distance.
"Mags, those things are on my six. I need help."
Magnolia unslung her rifle and looked at the radio one more time, wondering whether she should try to connect with the Hive first.
"There's no time."
Just as she started to turn away, she saw a symbol on the switchboard. She hesitated for a moment, then moved back to the equipment.
"Hold on, X, I've got an idea."
"I don't have time for ideas."
She flipped the button with a horn symbol below it. She turned the light off and bumped on her NVGs as an emergency siren blared outside, drowning out the screeches of birds and even the crack of thunder. Moving into the other room, she shouldered her rifle and trained it on the metal door.
"Come on, you son of a bitch," she muttered.
Sweat dripped down her forehead as she waited. She moved her finger to the cold metal trigger. With no gloves, it felt different. The wait wasn't long. A snorting came outside the building, loud enough to be heard in the rising and falling of the emergency siren. She held her ground, keeping the rifle aimed at the door.
"Mags," X panted over the comm. Those things aren't following me anymore. They're..."
Her plan had worked. The sound had drawn the hogs away from X, straight to her location. Again, something slammed the outside of the door, rattling the metal. She could hear guttural noises, something between a bark and a snort. She flinched at the sound of another creature hitting the metal shutters behind her. Pivoting, she pointed her rifle at the window. Another crash came from the other room, where a third beast tested the debris pile that served as a wall. They knew she was here, and it was only a matter of time before they battered their way inside. She knew better than to hope, but this time it was the only card she had to play. If her lucky streak continued, the door would hold until X could find Miles and return to kill the beasts. If it didn't, then she was about to join Roger and the other hell divers in Valhalla. The sound of the emergency siren had sent a chill of alarm through X. At first, he had scanned the sky and terrain for sirens. But this wasn't the electronic language of the monsters. It was coming from the direction of the compound where he had left Magnolia.
"Way to improvise, Mags," he thought.
For once, she had saved his hide. Now that the beasts were distracted, he could finally get out of this damn tree. He began the climb down the curving branches, cautious of the spiky thorns. X had been forced up here by the half-hog, half-dog beasts, with no choice but to try to pick them off with his rifle from above. The rounds did little to deter them, mostly ricocheting off the furry plate-like armor that covered their vital organs. It was his NVGs that saved him. The optics helped detect the creatures trying to sneak up on him as he made his way through the jungle in search of Miles. Their camouflage didn't work when his night vision was activated. He scanned the terrain a final time, looking for their meaty bodies and listening for their grunts and snorts over the rise and fall of the emergency siren. Rain continued to fall, as if the lightning that streaked through the bulging clouds were shaking the water loose. It cascaded down off the tropical leaves, turning the ground below into a mudslide. The tracks of the hogs had already vanished, and he saw no signs of movement or fresh prints anywhere below him. He wiped his visor off and finished the climb to the bottom, dropping the final 8 feet. His boots sank in the mud, and he quickly pulled them free and began moving again. The fort of trees ahead was his target. Miles was up there somewhere, dropped into a nest to feed the young birds. X checked his wrist monitor to make sure the dog hadn't been moved to a new location. He tapped the screen several times, pulling up the map in the corner of his HUD that showed his location. The beacon blinked on the map.
"I'm coming, buddy," X said. "Just hang on."
The dog's vitals were still strong, but the clock was ticking. The birds would feed soon now that the predators had gone away. The wail of the siren had saved X from the beasts, but it had likely put Miles in even more jeopardy. Moving between two thick tree trunks, X came out on a watercourse. The dry Oxbow Lake was quickly turning into a river. The flow created actual rapids down the slope and around the stand of trees where the vultures had built their nests. X wasted no time seizing the opportunity. With a grenade already loaded, He aimed at the bole of a tree growing out of the embankment on the other side of the watercourse. He fired, then ducked behind the thick, twisted roots of a nearby tree. Shrapnel from the blast whizzed overhead, and the birds once again took to the sky amid much screeching and cawing. Several rabbit-sized bugs darted out of their homes. X pulled a second grenade from the bandolier, loaded it, and rose to his feet. Another trigger pull launched the grenade into the deep, splintered gash the first grenade had blown in the tree bole. Leaves and branches rained down around him, and the tree creaked and swayed from the second impact. It began to lean out of the creek bank, but the roots held firm. He loaded a third grenade, just as something big hit him hard from behind. He knew at once that he was in the talons of a vulture. Feet kicking as he rose over the watercourse, he did the only thing he could think of. He fired the third grenade right into the gaping hole of the tree trunk where splintered wood stuck out like twisted rebar. An orange blast rocked the base, shredding the exposed roots and punching through the center. Hot shrapnel whined through the air. The monster holding him let out a shriek as a flurry of sharp sticks cut through its wings. X was falling then, and he landed with a splash in the rapids. The waist-deep flow of the water did little to break his fall and almost swept him away. He scrambled, then got his footing. The impact had rattled his bones, but Miles had little time, and that thought kept him moving. He fought the current and waddled toward the other side, his eyes on the top of the tree he had blown nearly in half. The sky above the canopy was moving, and it took him a moment to register that the motion wasn't from storm clouds. It was the vultures themselves. They had taken wing, filling the air above the forest canopy. A loud cracking emanated from the blasted tree. The splintered bole finally gave away, and the entire trunk began to lean. The top branches crashed into the next tree, shaking loose a litter of sticks and other debris. X pushed through the current to the side of the embankment. He slipped several times trying to crawl out over the loose earth and stones, but finally clawed his way up on a skein of roots to solid ground above. The broken tree continued to crunch and creak as roots snapped and branches crashed into other trees. He pushed himself up in the mud and ran away from the embankment at full speed to get out of the crash zone. The tree smashed to the jungle floor a few beats later, sending a violent quake beneath his boots. He took cover behind the base of another tree as a cascade of sticks, mud, and rocks flew through the lower canopy. The wail of the emergency siren reasserted itself, and over that, X heard something that made him smile. Heart pounding in his ears, he held in a breath to listen, and there it was again, the sound of his best friend's bark. X wanted to shout and scream for Miles, but he didn't want to draw more attention to his position. Magnolia had already notified every creature on this island that humans were back, and X had a feeling the birds and hogs could prove to be the least of their worries. He knew that it wouldn't be long before the monster birds forgot about the raucous noises and returned to their nests, and this time, they would feed on his dog's flesh. X bolted away from the tree after looking at the beacon on his wrist monitor again. The vitals were still strong, but Miles's heart rate had increased. He scanned the branches in the area where he had seen the bird lumbering through the air with Miles in its claws, but the collapse of the tree had him disoriented. Another bark helped X narrow down the location. Just ahead stood four massive trees, and the tallest seemed to be the likeliest spot, with several nests hanging in the higher branches. X brought up his scope, scanning them one by one, until he finally glimpsed the white hazard suit he had customized for Miles. Lowering the rifle, he broke into a run, moving like a fox over the slick terrain. He jumped over logs and ducked under branches. The sound of great flapping wings spurred him on. He kept low and ran hard, eyes trained on the nest. The sparsely feathered heads of the nestlings popped up, pecking at the air around Miles, and he barked back at them. A red flash of motion descended from the canopy and perched at the top of the nest. The mother had returned to help her young with their meal. X aimed his rifle, held in a breath, and fired a shot. The head and beak vanished in a spray of gore. Bullseye. The bird toppled off the nest, wings spread like a fallen angel, and slammed into the ground neck first a few seconds later. Two more vultures sailed in from different directions. X flicked the selector to automatic and sprayed the air to send the birds fanning out in all directions, filling the night with their squawks. A spear of lightning struck one of them, and the smoking carcass cartwheeled into the leaves, where it caught fire. Slinging his rifle strap, X grabbed the lowest limb of the tree and started climbing, his eyes on the nest 50 to 60 feet overhead. It was a long way to climb, and he had a target on his back.
"Hold on, buddy. Just hold on," he panted.
His arm was already burning from the slash the giant octopus had given him. The wound was infected now, and if he didn't get it treated, it could become septic. But none of that mattered if Miles died. He couldn't imagine life without his best friend. Gritting his teeth, he climbed faster. To reach the next branch, he jumped like a monkey, and when he got to an area where he couldn't reach another branch, he pulled out his sheath knife and stabbed the thick bark. He saw movement in his peripheral vision. A bird swooping down. He rotated as it spread its wings to flare. Stretching forth its talons, it prepared to snag him off the tree. X held onto the knife with one hand and grabbed the blaster from his thigh holster with the other. The flare streaked into the monster's breast. It flapped away, squawking in pain as its plumage caught fire. Then it tumbled from the air. X holstered the blaster and kept climbing. He was about 10 feet from the nest when the other birds began returning to their roosts. The speakers in his helmet crackled.
"X, do you copy?"
He was breathing too hard to answer right away.
"X, do you copy?"
"I'm busy," he panted.
"Are you okay?"
A flurry of white noise took over the comm, then died away.
"Is Miles okay?"
Despite the static interference, X could still hear the apprehension in her voice. She thought this was her fault.
"I've almost got him," X replied.
The branch cracked under his boot, and he jumped to another. Lightning flickered overhead, spreading its eerie, flickering glow over the jungle floor. The headless vulture looked like a pile of feathers. He had been so revved with adrenaline, he hadn't noticed the height until now. Miles barked, then yelped in pain, pulling X's focus back to the nest above.
"Hold on, boy," he shouted. "I'm coming."
X used the knife to aid him up the rest of the way to the nest. He pulled himself up on another thick branch, stood, and was scrabbling for a foothold when a hooked beak with orange lesions peered over the side of the nest. Orange feathered wings rose threateningly as two piercing black eyes glared at him. Magnolia relayed another message over the comm, something about a radio and the hive, but X was too focused on the strip of white plastic stained red and hanging from the bird's beak to respond. A full second passed before he realized what he was looking at. It was Miles's hazard suit. X grabbed the end of the beak with one hand and stabbed the left wing with the other. The young vulture jerked back, and X, holding onto the knife, was hauled up into the nest. Rolling over the lip into the nest, he saw Miles hunched in the corner and snarling. The four nestlings surrounded him, pecking at his suit.
"Hell no."
X let go of the knife hilt, leaving the blade lodged deep in the creature's wing. It slammed him with the other wing, pinning him against the side of the nest, then moved closer and thrust its beak at his chest armor. He squirmed slightly to his left and grabbed the beak with both hands. Then, screaming in rage, he pushed the wing back, freeing himself. He came up on his knees with the bird in a headlock. X twisted the baby monster's head and beak until both crunched. He kept going, pushing harder and harder, his old muscles straining, until he ripped the beak completely off. Tendrils of muscle and gullet hung off the base. He rose to his feet, panting like a wild animal, with the beak in his grip. The three remaining nestlings had turned away from Miles to look at him.
"Get away," he panted, "from my dog."
Holding the beak in both hands, he plunged the sharp end into the birds one by one until the nest was drenched in blood. He raised the last creature into the air for the other vultures in the jungle to see.
"You're done trying to kill us," he shouted.
Miles nudged up against his leg, and X slowly lowered the still twitching baby bird and rolled it out of the nest. Lightning flashed over the bay in the distance, and in the glow, he saw something that froze him for a second. The incoming tide had dislodged the seawolf from the beach. The damaged vessel was now in the surf, being pushed back into the bay.
X cursed. This time it wasn't Magnolia who screwed up. It was on him. If he had kept an open line to Timothy, he would have known about this. But that still didn't explain why the boat was drifting. Why the hell wasn't the AI doing something to stop it?
Son of a bitch robot is leaving without us, X said over the comm.
7. The nightmare was just like the others. Michael was stumbling through the snowy wastelands in Hades. His lips and throat were dry from lack of water, but he couldn't melt or drink the snow because of the radiation. He pushed on, continuing his search for X. Ice framed his visor, narrowing his view of the frozen terrain. A line of tracks led into the city once called Chicago, a place of many scrapers. The colossal architecture continued to withstand the test of time. Here, hell had literally frozen over. Trapped in the nightmare, Michael slogged through his own personalized hell. The high-pitched electronic wails of the sirens became a satanic chorus that followed him down empty streets and over wind-carved snowdrifts. The tracks wound up and down the dunes, and the beacon on his HUD blinked with Xavier Rodriguez's location, but every time he got close, the beacon would move.
X! Michael shouted. X, where are you?
In these dreams, the answer was always the same. Over the howling wind, X would shout,
"Stay away, Tin! This is not the life your father wanted for you."
Michael would turn and turn, but the voice of X would echo off the frozen sides of buildings and fade away.
"Please, X, where are you?" Michael yelled back. "Let me help you."
He continued his trek through the endless streets, his rifle at the ready, eyes sweeping constantly for hostiles. The city continued producing the music of hell, clawed feet skittering over icy metal, the wailing of the sirens, and the crash and clatter of structures finally giving way to Mother Nature. Halfway through the dream, he would hear the worst of all the noises. A loud whap! Michael turned to see a helldiver lying in the middle of the street, its parachute luffing in the breeze. Jagged bones protruded from a semi-liquid body held together only by armor and a hazard suit.
"I told you to stay away, Tin! Don't come after me or you'll end up like him!"
Michael looked skyward to see X ascending by helium balloon toward the storm clouds. He would scream and scream, and then Michael would realize it was he himself screaming, and not X. His eyes flitted back to the dead driver, and his gun went up at the sight of a horde of sirens bounding up the street to consume the corpse of the deceased diver, Michael's father. Their leathery muscles stretched as the monsters pulled Aaron apart, limb by limb, their shrieks piercing the night. Michael aimed and pulled the trigger, but his rifle wouldn't fire. When the sirens were done with his dad, they would come for him, and every time they were just about to sink their claws into his flesh, he would jerk awake, covered in sweat, and sucking in air for another scream. This time, though, he caught himself, and didn't wake Layla. She was apparently still exhausted from last night. Even the thought of their sweaty bodies and her moans of pleasure was not enough to dispel the horrid images in his mind. Michael pulled the covers off to cool his hot skin, exposing Layla's naked body as he did so. He gently pulled the sheet back up over her breasts, and for a moment he just watched her sleep, studying her freckled face, full lips, and eyelids quivering in REM sleep.
"I hope you're dreaming of something beautiful."
He let out a low sigh, careful not to wake Layla. Weeks had passed since Michael slept through the night, and it wasn't for lack of exhaustion. 3 jobs and a rigorous schedule had him falling into bed at night and passing out almost at once. The problem was staying asleep. The nightmares were getting worse, and now the fatigue was starting to eat at him during the day, sparking the anger problem from his youth. He was always on edge, and always a hair trigger away from anger.
"That's creepy, Tin," Layla whispered, opening one eye and looking over at him. "You know I don't like it when you watch me sleep." "Sorry," he said, turning onto his back.
The alarm clock went off a moment later, and the wall-mounted screen warmed to life, projecting the image of the sun to represent a phenomenon that had once helped humans awaken in the morning. The mythical image did little to stir him awake at the early hour. He was wiped out.
What time is it?
Layla mumbled. 6, and I've got to get up.
What? Why?
She sat up and looked at the clock, then back to him.
I thought you weren't going to the farm today.
I'm not. Layla rubbed her eyes.
So where are you going?
To help train the new divers, remember?
Oh, yeah.
She smiled seductively at him.
Was last night a dream, by the way?
Michael grinned back, his cheeks warming.
I'm pretty sure that was real. And it was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Now both brows went up.
All I get is a yeah?
I'm sorry. It's just... Layla snuggled closer and put a hand on his arm.
What, Michael? Tell me.
It's X. I just can't stop thinking about him. I've been having bad dreams all night. Slept like crap.
Again?
He nodded. She kissed him on the cheek and then nestled her head on his shoulder.
I'm sorry. I wish there was something I could do.
Feeling anxious, he pulled away and swung his legs out of bed, leaving her lying there half naked and staring at him in the dim lighting.
There is something I can do, something we can do. We can start training the new divers so that when we do find X, we can help.
Layla patted the bed where he had just been lying beside her. He knew what was coming, and he didn't want to hear it.
I really want to get going. Feel free to join me later.
She frowned, eyes flitting downward and then up again.
Michael, I love you, and that's why you need to listen to me. Don't you remember what X told you about coming after him?
Of course I do, he snapped. But if he needs my help, I'm going after him. He didn't bother telling her about the nightmare that had startled him awake. Seeing his dead father and X and Hades had reminded him what was at stake and how precious life was. I lost my dad a decade ago, and I also lost X for those 10 years since then. Now I'm afraid I'm going to lose X again. But honestly, what hurts even more is that he had seemed okay with that when he left.
Oh, Michael. He didn't leave because of you. He left because this no longer felt like home to him. Deep down, I believe he was too selfless to ask you to go with. He wanted you to stay here and live out your life, with the hope that someday you two might be reunited.
Maybe, Michael replied. He thought back to their final moments in the launch bay of Deliverance, right before they dropped the Seawolf into the ocean.
You remind me of your dad, X had said with a smile. He'd be very proud of you, as I am.
Why didn't you say something then?
Michael wagged his head.
I don't know. I just don't know what the right thing is anymore.
He threw on his uniform, the fog of sleep banished by the wave of anxiety born of regret.
Ugh. I wanted to sleep in for once. But you're not giving me much choice, are you, Tin?
The wall monitor buzzed before he could respond, and a voice crackled from the speakers.
Commander Everhart, are you in your quarters?
Michael, his foot halfway into a pant leg, hopped over to the monitor and pushed the comm button.
Roger, I'm here. This is Ensign White. The captain is requesting your presence on the Bridge of Deliverance as soon as possible.
On my way, Michael said.
Bring Layla, Bronson White added. She's going to want to hear this.
Katrina stroked her jaw, trying to listen to the scrambled transmission from Magnolia. Ensign Ada Winslow, seated in front of the radio equipment, was working to stabilize the signal.
Almost got it, she said.
The beeps and background noise of other conversations and automated messages filled the room while they waited. Among them came a transmission from the Hive.
Captain DeVita, this is Timothy Pepper. All systems operating at optimal levels. Next update in T-minus 2 hours.
Roger that, Katrina said.
There we go, Ada said.
Katrina gestured for Ensigns Bronson White and Dave Connor to turn their monitors down so she could hear. White noise, followed by Magnolia's voice, filled the bridge.
Miss Khatib, this is Captain DeVita. Can you hear me?
More static, followed by,
yes, I can, finally.
Where are you? Katrina asked.
I'm trapped in a facility on an island. X is on his way back right now with Miles, but we're surrounded.
She was talking fast, and the static interference didn't make her any easier to understand. An emergency siren wailed in the background. Katrina could hear that. And something else.
"What is that sound?" she asked.
"Hogs," Magnolia replied.
"Please repeat."
"Not like the kind we have on the hive. Big pigs with tusks." The doors to the bridge whisked open, and Katrina turned as Layla and Michael hurried inside.
"What's going on?"
Michael asked from across the space. Magnolia relayed another message, answering his question.
"I've been holed up here for a few hours after we got attacked. One of the vultures snatched Miles and X went after him. Captain, I found something in the database here. Something that you have to hear. It may help humanity."
"Can you upload it and send it to us?" Katrina asked. Layla and Michael crowded around the station.
"I'm working on sending this to you via satellite. I was able to hack into the computers here."
Layla maneuvered up to the radio.
"Mags, where are you? And what in the wastes is going on? I've found something that explains what happened to the world. I haven't been able to watch or listen to it all, but..."
Magnolia's voice crackled, masking the words with static. "Where is my counterpart?" said another voice. It was Timothy Pepper. His translucent hologram emerged next to the circular table in the center of the room.
"Better question is, where is X?" Michael said.
Katrina summoned her captain's voice, which was firm and just shy of a shout, so White would get it even with his bad hearing.
"Everyone calm down."
That did the trick for everyone except Magnolia. She continued speaking even faster than before.
"I managed to get the satellite dish working here, but I'm not sure the radio I'm taking with me is going to work, assuming I get out of here alive, and assuming the Seawolf isn't too far gone."
"Slow down, Mags," Katrina said, lowering her voice. "One thing at a time. Tell me what happened to the Seawolf." Michael stepped up next to Katrina. His hair was pulled back into a ponytail with strands sticking out in various directions. Purple bags hung under his eyes. Typically, this would be a sign of drug or alcohol abuse, but she knew him better than that. He was just exhausted.
"The Seawolf was damaged yesterday. We were attacked by a really big octopus."
Static again washed over the channel.
Layla looked to Katrina and said, "Did she say what I thought she did?"
Ada's eyes widened.
"What's an octopus, and how big is a really big one?"
Not knowing how to answer, Katrina just said,
"Magnolia, you're breaking up again. Our radio is destroyed, and we left the Seawolf to find parts on this island, but the boat is drifting back into the bay."
Katrina wasn't sure how much she had missed, but the last part gave her heart a stutter.
"What do you mean, drifting?"
White noise covered Magnolia's voice.
"Magnolia, do you copy?"
Katrina asked. A fleeting moment of silence held the bridge, the tension palpable.
"Hold on,"
Magnolia suddenly said, her voice as clear as day. In the backdrop, Katrina heard the same animal grunt she had heard before, and something like an animal digging.
"Shit, shit, shit,"
Magnolia said quietly.
"They're almost inside."
"Sirens?" Layla asked. Michael's face turned even paler.
"This isn't fucking happening. We have to do something."
Katrina could sense his anger, but she didn't like cursing on her bridge. She shot him a glance.
"The emergency sirens you're hearing are from the facility, not the creatures," Ada said.
"Mags, tell us what happened to the Seawolf," Katrina said.
"I'm not sure. X just said it's been swept back out into the bay. I'm not sure if Timothy is in control of the vessel."
"That's not good,"
Layla whispered.
"Is there a way we can contact Timothy?"
"My duplicate program would not abandon the divers," the other Timothy said, his voice taking on a firm tone. "I am here to serve and help my human friends. So is my counterpart on the Seawolf."
Michael turned to Dave Connor.
"Ensign, can you get a lock on their location?"
"Already working on it, Commander," Dave replied.
He tapped his navigation system on the screen, tapping his prosthetic leg on the deck as he worked.
"What happened to X?" Michael asked Katrina.
"I still don't know, but we know he's alive."
Michael ran a hand over the back of his neck.
"Okay, done," Magnolia said. "I'm uploading the data and sending it to you, Deliverance."
There was another pause, then a shout, gunfire, and an anguished wail.
Ada looked away from the radio equipment, her dark face distraught.
Captain, would you like to take my place?
Katrina nodded and took Ada's chair where she waited impatiently for Magnolia to respond.
Mags, Katrina said. Mags, what is going on there?
They could hear her breathing over the rise and fall of the siren, but she didn't respond. The suspense left Katrina and everyone around her even more anxious. Layla grabbed Michael's hand. Bronson White balanced himself with a hand on the back of a chair. Ada put her hand over her chest. Gunfire cracked over the channel and echoed through the bridge, followed by Magnolia's frantic voice.
Those things are almost inside. I'm sorry. I have to go and get ready for them.
Magnolia, Katrina said, take care of yourself. You have a lot of people up here counting on you too.
We know. And thanks for reminding us, Magnolia replied.
Katrina smirked at that. If Mags could joke, she could also fight. Guttural snorting, then gunfire came over the channel. Then static. Katrina got up and motioned for Ada, who moved over to check the radio. She twisted the knob, and then shook her head.
We lost her.
Lower the volume, Katrina said. Ada did as ordered, and silence fell over the bridge. Timothy's hologram moved over beside Michael, and everyone, including the AI, looked to Katrina for orders. A monitor beeped, and Ensign White, hunched over, walked to his station.
I just received the upload from Magnolia.
Download it and let me know when it's ready, Katrina said. She glanced over at Connor. Ensign, were you able to pinpoint their location?
Yes, Captain. They seem to be stranded in a bay that is part of the Turks and Caicos Islands. Bringing it up on the main screen now.
Good, Katrina said. Update our current map of their journey. The hatch to the bridge opened again, this time disgorging Les Mitchell's tall, gangly frame. He ducked below the overhead, stopping just inside the room. He looked to Layla and Michael, then to Katrina.
I've got the recruit Sergeant Sloan gave us waiting in the launch bay. I thought Commander Everhart and...
His words trailed off as he scanned the assembled faces.
Okay, what did I miss?
Magnolia suppressed thoughts of her family and friends aboard the airships. They knew she was alive, and she had successfully sent the upload. But if the Seawolf really had sailed away, then she would never see them again. How the hell had the boat ended up back in the bay? The question racked her brain, but she pushed it aside for now. The best way to stay calm right now was to trust that Timothy wouldn't abandon them. For the past hour, she had sat at the desk next to the skeletal corpse, worrying about X and Miles as she scanned hard drives. The hogs from hell were literally at the door, pawing, pounding, trying to bash their way inside. It was nerve-wracking, but so far the hatches, door, and debris pile were still holding them back. Every few minutes she had been firing a few shots into the wall to deter the tunneling, and she was about to do it again. Another option kept tempting her, though. Her eyes went to the switch that activated the emergency siren. If she shut it off, maybe the beasts would scatter back into the jungle. Or they might go after X and Miles. She opted to keep the siren blaring while she finished gathering up the rest of the equipment in the expandable duffel bag she had stuffed into her cargo pocket. The banging and scratching at the main entrance made it hard to focus. She knew what those tusks and hooves would do to her flesh. But so far, the door and window hatches were holding the monsters back. It was the one burrowing into the control room that had her worried. Apparently, she wasn't the only one. The spider that had taken refuge in the concrete rubble reemerged, furry legs scuttling toward Magnolia. She stomped it into mush under her boot, then scraped the sole against the concrete, leaving a trail of goo.
Gross,
she whispered, bringing her rifle up to her shoulder. She aimed at the collapsed wall, waiting for the real monster to present a target. The chunks in the bottom right of the rubble pile were starting to move. She could hear the rapid breathing coming from below.
Kid, do you copy?
X said. She breathed a sigh of relief.
Yeah, copy. Where are you?
Almost back. Sit tight, kid.
Easy for you to say.
Still, if she couldn't sit tight, she could at least stop screwing up. She finished loading the rest of the radio equipment, but left her battery unit plugged in to keep the emergency siren going. Hunching down, she aimed the rifle at the rattling hunks of wall where the hog was digging.
Come on, show me an inch of that ugly mug, she said.
The creature out there was digging harder now, knocking several rocks loose from the wall. One dislodged, then a second hit her in the shoulder. She tried to back up, but fell on her butt just as the deformed face she had taunted earlier filled the opening. The jaw parted, a rope of saliva drooping between tusks. The beast snapped at her right boot, but she pulled back just in time to keep her foot. Lining up a shot, she pulled the trigger and heard the click of a jammed round. So much for not screwing up. She just couldn't catch a break. Magnolia scrambled for safety as the creature fought to get free of the hole. By the time she made it back to the entryway, the front legs and shoulders were through the broken wall. The furry, slavering abomination swung its massive head, shaking rocks and dirt loose. It had to weigh over 300 pounds, and the fur covering its thick hide seemed to be metallic. She went to close the door between herself and the beast, then saw the loaded duffel bag lying next to the radio equipment. Her spare battery unit was still plugged into the dashboard. She could see only two options, both of them crazy. One, free the jammed round and blast this fucker, or two, snatch the bag and battery and then run into the other room. Either action required more time than she had, and every second of delay worsened the odds against her. The thud of bone on the front door helped her decide. The only way out of this was to fight, not hide and wait for X to save her ass. Magnolia pulled the curved blades from her back. "Okay, shithead," she growled. "You're gonna have to work for your supper." The hog snapped at her, slinging snot and spittle. It struggled to free its muscular torso and haunches, which were still jammed in the hole it had dug. Magnolia danced around the kick of a foreleg and another thrust of the head. She kicked the warty pink muzzle with her steel-toed boot, and it felt like kicking a rock. The impact forced her backward, pain racing up her leg. She planted her left foot and brought her blades down at the same time, aiming for the thick neck, hoping to behead the monster. Her blade scraped against what felt like sheet metal. In the amount of time it took her to bring them down on the neck, the fur had gone stiff and lain flat, forming a sheet of armor that sent sparks flying and a stinging recoil that raced up her forearms. She stumbled backward a second time, staring at the chipped blades in her hands. The sound of falling rubble brought her eyes up as the beast hauled its body free and lumbered out of the hole. Magnolia backed up until she hit a wall. She raised the damaged blades as the monster gave out a deep animal rumble. Now she got her first good look at the full length of the creature, including the other side of a face, missing an eyeball and half a tusk. The saggy lips drooled more saliva mixed with blood. This was the creature X had shot earlier, and judging by the glare of its remaining eye, it wanted payback. She tried to block out the sounds of the other hogs, the emergency siren, and a new message from X, and focus on what she could do right now. Once again, she had her back to the wall because of her own stupid mistakes, and this time she was going to get exactly one more shot at saving herself. It came a second later. As the beast lunged, Magnolia flattened her body against the wall and moved to the side while swinging the blade in her left hand sideways. The tip caught in the ruined eye socket. The hog missed its target, her chest, and the snout slammed into the wall where she had stood. She darted backward, ducking low as it twisted to snap at her. She came up swinging at the closest target, the monster's right hind leg, beneath the fur line. This time the sharp edge sliced through the sinew and caught on bone. The hog let out a long, piercing howl of pain. She pulled the blade free, blood spattering the floor. Another hack cut deep into the bone. The beast had sidled away by the time she sliced the air a third time. Its tail and hindquarters slammed into the desks and computer equipment, knocking her battery loose. The emergency siren waned and faded to nothing, leaving Magnolia with the sound of the panting creature and her own labored breath. This was it. Her final moments. The right hind leg gushed blood, but it managed to remain standing. This beast was one of the most magnificent products of evolution she had ever seen. A shame it had to die. As it charged, she pulled the blaster from her holster and waited a beat until she had the face in her sights. Both shotgun shells fired, their pattern covering the entire head. Blood, bone, brain, and pieces of the blade stuck in the eye socket cut through the air, flecking the desks with gore. She jumped out of the way as the creature hit the floor. Magnolia checked the blade.
A glance confirmed what she already knew. It was ruined. She quickly moved away and gathered the duffel bag of equipment, stashing her battery unit inside. Gunfire cracked outside the facility. She picked up her rifle, worked the jammed round free and pocketed it, and ran out to the other room to unlock the door and help X. She stepped out into the night, weapons sweeping the fields for contacts. Insects chirped, and the screech of a vulture echoed in the distance. Another flurry of shots drowned out the noises, and she followed it to the other side of the building, moving cautiously.
Heel to toe, heel to toe, just like a soldier. No more mistakes.
Hearing a bark, she moved faster, fighting the impulse to run. She paused at the crumbling foundation of the building to listen, then peeked around the edge to sneak a glimpse. X stood in the other field over a carcass. Miles turned in her direction, but she was tracking movement in the high weeds and foliage 50 feet from the dog. Bringing up her rifle, she zoomed in on the ripple spreading across the top of the weeds. This wasn't from the breeze. The camouflaged beast bounded out and bolted for X, who still hadn't seen it. There was no time to shout a warning, only enough to get off a 3-round burst. The charging monster, dead on its feet, slammed into X and Miles, knocking them down like Skittles. Magnolia was running as soon as she finished firing. Her eyes swept the skyline for vultures and the field for more terrestrial predators, then back to X and Miles. When she got there, X was groaning under the weight of the dead hog. Miles was already up, tail wagging beneath the suit, which had bloody talon marks on either side.
"Nice shot, Mags," X growled.
"No thanks, kid?" she asked. Reaching down, she grabbed X and helped hoist him to his feet. "Now come on, old man. Let's see if we can still chase down our boat and get off this nasty island."
8. The clank of lockers and rustling of gear filled the launch bay on the Hive. Les nodded at the two guards standing sentry outside. Both were in their early 50s. On the Hive, a ripe old age.
"Good luck, Giraffe," one of them said.
"Looks like you're gonna need it with them new young divers," said the other. "I'd volunteer, but I don't move as fast as I used to."
When Les had gone to Sergeant Sloan, he requested older militia soldiers like these guys, the best she had, just as Katrina had instructed. His goal was to fill some of the launch tubes with people who could fight, but who had already lived a good deal of their lives. But once again, the volunteers and recruits were mostly young people. The old guys were standing guard outside the launch bay. Les sighed and stepped inside the room where the new recruits and volunteers were suiting up. They'd been given some older gear that hadn't been used in ages, but was still in good condition. Les was pretty sure it had once belonged to Michael, Layla, Aaron, and Andrew, but they'd upgraded their armor and suits over the years. Sandy gave him a little wave, which he returned with a nod of his head. Jed stood stock still next to her, half suited up, looking at something in his hand. The young diver's mouth was hanging partway open as he stared at a small sliver of paper. His lips moved, and then he stowed the object in his pocket and resumed the task of getting into his gear with his fellow recruits. Les crossed the room, his mind racing. He still hadn't seen the data Magnolia uploaded and sent them, and he was anxious to get back to Deliverance for a full report, but his first job was to start the new Helldivers training with Aaron. He joined her at the wind tunnels, where she cupped her helmet under one arm, looking out over the youthful faces in front of them as they suited up and put on their armor. "Finish armoring up," Aaron said. "We'll begin in a few minutes." Trey nodded at Les from the front of the crowd. He had a freshly shaved head and about the same complement of pimples as the other teenagers in the group. Seeing his son standing there, shoulders straight, chin up, and talking with Jed Snow about their upcoming first dive, gave Les a flash of anxiety.
First dive.
He was still catching up to the reality that his son had volunteered, but what could he do besides help train him to survive? Les stood at a distance, watching and listening to their conversation.
"Why did you guys join up?" Jed asked.
Vish and Jaideep, still finishing up with their gear, exchanged a glance.
"There aren't many job opportunities left," Jaideep said.
Vish laughed.
"More like no one would hire us."
"I know the feeling," Trey said.
Sandy and Jed smiled uneasily.
How about you?
Vish asked. Jed scratched at the stubble on his chin and then pointed at the Raptor logo hanging from the bulkhead.
Commander Everhart and Layla Brower are my inspiration. They taught me what kindness and courage are, and now that I've recovered from the cough, it's time to join them as a helldiver.
I'm here because I want to see the surface and help my family, Sandy said.